Hey, Jen, what's wrong?
Ugh, I just got off a sales call with someone who was trying to pitch me something, but this time I actually wanted the product, and they just wouldn't listen.
So I'm guessing that this brillante salesperson didn't close the deal.
No chance.
You know, they needed my little ebook of how to listen. It's available right now, and it's free. This little book is a wake-up call in sales that your silver tongue and gift of gab will not cut it anymore. Prospects need to feel listened to, or you can kiss your commission goodbye. When you talk, you can't hear customers' thoughts and opinions. This free ebook will give you the insight to find out the genuine buying motive of your customer every time. Click the link in the show notes and get started.
I'm sorry, what'd you just say? I can name one of ours, Pee Outside.
Yeah.
Yep. That's a good one.
Yeah, it's mainly for the dogs.
Well, I can tell you, though, I did consulting for a decade in textile screen printing, and we would rearrange somebody's factory over a weekend, and the victory was we peed off the loading dock. Where do we start this? An answer doesn't matter. We're having a good time. Right.
He couldn't wait to get in here.
You need sales balls to make sales calls.
I'm tweeting that puppy.
Okay. Hi, everybody. I'm Jeffrey Gittimer. Welcome to Sell or Die, the best damn podcast in the world for sales and personal development. I wrote the Little Red Book of Selling. I wrote the Sales Manifesto, and I am joined by
Jen Gluckow, founder and author of Sales in a New York Minute.
We have no video today because Jen is hardly wearing any clothing. I just want to...
The studio is like hot, let me tell you, okay? I had to take off my shirt. I have another shirt underneath, just saying.
But all of a sudden, people are pouring in the door just to kind of get a look.
No. I am wearing a shirt. I'm just less clothed than usual, that's all, because it's hot.
So, Jen, who we have on the show today?
We have the most amazing person. Her name is Teresa Kwan. She's the CEO of Daringly Great Leadership, and she's freaking phenomenal, guys. I have the honor and pleasure of texting and communicating with her almost daily, and so now I'm getting to share her with you guys, with you, diehard you, because she is unbelievable. She helps startups become sustainable companies. She's been doing this for over 20 years, even though she only looks like she's 20. Yeah. And she's going to explain to us why core values matter in the workplace and just so much more. So many great gems. But before we get to Teresa.
Hold on. I want to tell the diehards what's going to happen today when you listen to Teresa Kwan. You will take a quantum leap.
Woo!
Huh? How about that for, huh?
Woo!
All right, you guys.
That was woo,
Thank
Jeffrey.
Thank you very much.
That was like a woo term, just
I'm
saying.
I'm here all week.
I'm the woo person here. Before we get to Teresa, it's time to read a five-star review. So, Doug, what do we got?
We have one in honor of baseball season. Astros fan 30,000 writes,
oh, my God.
Been a while since I listened to or watched Jeffrey in action. Jeffrey and Jen make a great combo, very entertaining and motivating. I'm back on the train.
Wow. I love it. We do make a great combo.
We are the combo of all combos.
Jeffrey and Jen, our rabbi said the same thing.
We are better than shrimp and grits. That's a combo.
I hate grits.
I know. I don't like grits.
Peanut butter and jelly?
I don't know.
I don't like jelly.
Yeah. Hamburger and french fries.
So Astros fan is back on the train. Where's the Jeffrey and Jen train going these days?
We are going to Charlotte, North Carolina, predominantly. We're trying to stick in the studio and create amazing, amazing content. Love the studio. It's transformed tremendously by the great Doug Branson, who is leaving a legacy.
That's right. We are creating, I mean, our train is going fast, man. We are creating amazing digital solutions for you guys so that you can sell more, serve memorably, build loyal customers, create more trust. We have so much in store
for
you.
And earn to your full potential.
I can't wait to show you, but we can't show you today because right now we have to get on to Teresa Kwan.
Yeah.
So Teresa's going to explain why salespeople need to be authentically present. That's right. Not just present, but authentically present.
Got it.
She reveals the difference.
That does not mean, by the way, showing your driver's license. What it means is to be perceived as authentic based on the words and the actions that you create in a dialogue.
Yeah, and also, I know I mentioned core values at the beginning. She's going to explain the difference between core values and mission statements because a lot of people get them confused. And if you're in the habit of setting goals for yourself, the difference really matters. Plus, you're going to find out what Culture Island is and why you want to create it. So, diehards,
please welcome the great Teresa Kwan.
Diehards, we have an amazing guest here today. Her name is Teresa Kwan, and she's the CEO of Daringly Great Leadership. She teaches high-impact leadership, and she is a team coach for purpose-driven online entrepreneurs. Could be you listening.
I know.
Right,
I want
now
to find out about this.
That's right. She is amazing.
No, she comes very highly recommended from Jennifer Gluckow.
That's right.
As one of those,
really,
no. The two of you have sort of she bonded, and I like that because there are very few people that qualify to bond with Jen.
That's true. That's true. You're one of them, Jeffrey.
Yeah, I know. But however, I bat with the girls, but I am not one of them. So, but Teresa has a lot of experience, and you have a lot of experience, but Teresa is way more experienced than she looks.
That's right. She looks very young. She's gifted in the beauty department.
Yeah.
But Teresa and I have these incredibly intellectual conversations, and they shift between like personal, some bullshit, whatever, to like, okay, so what do you think about this in your business? Or what do you think about that? And we do this thing called Voxer that she got me into. It's like a walkie-talkie chat, and she can be talking while I'm typing or vice versa. And it's really cool. And we have these incredible conversations. So I'm really excited to have her on the show today. And Teresa, I want to know, when did you realize you had a gift for putting together great teams?
Ooh, you know, when did I really consciously know or subconsciously know as a 43-year-old adult looking back?
Let's go both.
So, you know, I actually recently did a retrospective interview with somebody and they asked me a similar question, only like, when was the first time you thought you were a leader or something like that? And when I think about it, I realize that I've always gathered teams and made teams and gathered people. That's just like a gift that I have. And I don't know, can I say since age three?
I was always
the one that like, you know, get everybody together, pull people from all over. So like they don't even know each other, but they always knew how to, I would always like get them to play together, give them roles or like tell them the rules. And I'm like, this is what we're going to do. This is what we're going to have a play. And you are this role and you're going to do this. Or like, oh, you don't want to do that. Okay, let's trade here. And I would always negotiate people's roles and how to like have a happy team.
We know someone that does that.
Yeah.
She's 10.
Your daughter. You know, I can picture Teresa like at her house playing with the other kids and they're all like building a house or something. And Teresa's like, okay, well, you're going to work on the brick and you're going to work on the interior.
That would mean only with leaves. So yeah, we like build rockets.
Okay, so let's go into a business. And, you know, someone has a disruptive team or a non-congruent team, or they just plain ordinarily don't understand the process of team. What do you tell them?
Just go for the clutter. This is good. What do I tell them? Actually, I actually start by listening. Mm-hmm. So I'm a big person in terms of like, you know, everybody's different. One of my top five strengths is individualization. And I always just like to go observe, ask questions, listen, kind of watch in the wild what's going on and start to watch the dynamics. What do I tell them if like someone just asks me, you know, over a cocktail, like, what should I do?
Yeah.
I usually ask them, start by asking them, well, talk to me about what is the language of your business? And what I'm talking about is how do you talk about the culture of your business, the heartbeat of your business,
in terms of your core values. And, you know, I actually did a little rant last night, just talking to someone with a similar question, because the immediate usual response for people who are still in trouble in hot water with their teams is, oh, we've got core values. Go like check them out on our website. And I'm like,
yeah. Do you know one of them? Name one or I'm going to shoot you in the face. And most people can't name one.
I can name one of ours. Pee outside.
Yeah.
Yep. That's a good one.
Yeah, it's mainly for the dogs.
Well, I can tell you, though, I did consulting for a decade in textile screen printing, and we would rearrange somebody's factory over a weekend, and the victory was we peed off the loading dock.
I know, right? That was what, in the 60s?
No, oh, my word.
70s?
Yeah.
So, like, all the guys who just whip them out and right there.
We didn't put it that way.
Okay. I'm just checking because I'm like, that would be a sight. That would be on the New York Times.
Oh, yeah. It was only two or three people. It was always two people, me and my partner, Duke. But sometimes three or four people would come along. I don't even know if Richard Greaves ever peed off the dock.
You know, I'm sure he did. I don't know. Yeah. But,
But it was a sign that it was over and we could go to the next thing.
So let's talk about this. How do you recommend that a team actually create or identify their core values? Or even like an individual salesperson, like how do you as a diehard come up with your own core values?
Yeah. So I think it really depends on your stage of business. For example, like there might be those who are, you know, the solopreneur, like business owner, kind of they have their employees, or maybe you've got to the point where you have some momentum, you've got a team around you, you guys got a team around you, and you've been in operation for a while. I would say that core values really come from stories, stories of heartache, stories of success, stories of feeling like you're on top of the world, stories of moments of, I just want to throw things, like I never want to do that again. And from those stories are basically your values emerge from those stories.
Can you give us an example maybe of one of yours?
Sure. So for me, I'm all about forming bonds. So from a very young age, I mean, I had a rough childhood. The things that I felt like I had the most life from were actually relationships that were nurturing, mutual, very authentic, like none of the BS, like, you know, I like you, I hate you stuff, but like truly mutually blessing, enjoying one another. And so, and I would say that that continues on into my adulthood. Jen, you're like my girl, you are one of the girls I like, she bonded, right?
Yep.
That kind of authenticity, that kind of bond, I feel like there's something, there's magic there. Mm. And
I don't want to interrupt you, but I'm going to. One of your core values would be enjoy other people.
Close. For me, I call it, form bonds. Okay. Form bonds. And what I mean by that is that you can enjoy someone and never really make a connection with them. Uh-huh. But when you actually form a bond, like a connection that's meaningful, that has a partnership, that is to say like, I choose you and you choose me. Mm-hmm. That's when the magic happens.
But,
and it could be temporary or long-term.
I'm going to clarify it and say, I talk to everybody. That's one of my core values. I talk to everybody. Mm-hmm. And from there, I can determine who I want to talk to more. Like I'll talk to you superficially. So when you say form bonds, it has to start someplace. You don't say, 100%. Hey, sweetie, let's bond.
Right.
You start out with casual conversation and decide, oh, this person has potential. And then you talk a little bit more and you talk a little bit more and you talk a little bit more.
So it sounds like you're starting from the beginning and Teresa's starting with the goal in mind.
No, she's starting with an outcome.
Mm-hmm.
And well, I'm starting with, so it's not, the value is not usually the outcome. It's like, this is my intention in life.
Oh, cool. So I intend to form bonds.
Yes.
Yes, my intent to form, and that bond, again, needs to be mutual. It's a mutual blessing and joy giving relationship. So you and I both, like, it's a lot like sales. Like you're qualifying people. Like, do I want to form a bond with you? Right? Right. And some people are choosing you already and be like, oh man, you're it. I've got to work with you.
Yeah, but I only like you as a friend. So don't be thinking.
Well, there's different kinds of bonds, right?
Yeah.
And you can have the, like, I mean, I have friends who I won't see for, I mean, I've, this is a true story. I won't have seen for 15, 20 years, right? And I might be have a long layover in a city and then suddenly call them up and say, hey, you want to get a drink? And we're bonded, but it's like that bond isn't necessarily continual, like everyday nurturing bond. Mm-hmm. But we do have a bond. We have a bond from a shared experience or having invested in one another in our time and in our service and in our hearts, right? And same thing with my clients and customers. It's like, yes, I have genuine moments with people like you, Jeffrey. You're like, talk to everybody. You have these genuine moments. That doesn't mean you're going to like, you know, da-da-da-da, like you did with.
So I'm a sales guy. We talk to salespeople. Mm-hmm. How should salespeople begin to form bonds?
You know, I'm going to give a cliche answer, but with a qualifier behind it. I think it really starts with authenticity. And in knowing who you are and presenting that really well. And then also, too, it's like being like authentically present with the person that you're across, right? And listening to what their needs are and getting to know them and then really like starting to cultivate a conversation around the people and not necessarily the transaction that's coming.
But the salesperson wants to make the sale.
100%.
And it may not always be with bond in mind. And salespeople tend to be bullshitters. And they'll use phrases like, well, quite frankly, or honestly. And and that's not authentic. That's bullshit.
Right. No, you're right. And I think that that's the difference between a core value that I am in my company and my business and my life and living out that maybe like people who work with me in sales or the way I sell, it's very different than like maybe your average salesman.
So a core value could be cut the non-important phony bullshit.
Cut the bullshit. Yeah. So, okay, this is interesting because that's Teresa's core value. And so that might not be one of our diehards core values. So can you talk about the importance of, you know, whether you're running and managing a team or an individual salesperson, like why should our listeners, our diehards, why should they be trying to figure out what their core values are?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. So, you know, where I start with is especially the business, the person who has started the business, right? Oftentimes when you're starting the business, this is really just an overflow. Everything you're teaching is an extension of your experience, of your knowledge, of your expertise. And like, and then all in it is really just the how of you, how you do it, how you talk to your customers, how you approach people, how you make the sale, right? There's like a, there is a finesse that's really going to be Jeffrey. That's really going to be Jennifer. That's really going to be whoever the salesperson is.
Let me throw something at you.
Sure.
We have a customer, IDI. They were formed 40 years ago with one core value. They sell insulation, and their core value was not sell a lot of insulation. Their core value was help contractors become more successful.
That's actually not a core value. That's a mission statement.
Okay. No, it wasn't. So, no, that was not. That was not the mission of the company. It was the essence of how the product was sold.
So let's hear from Teresa and let's. What's the difference then between what your definition is of a core value versus a mission statement?
Sure. So. Let me start with like, so it's really a collection and I call it that your culture jam or your culture mix. It's your vision, mission, your core values, right? And your vision is like, what is the thing that, what is the mark that you're making on the world? Like, why do you exist and what's the mark that you're making, right? You know, change the way 1 million salespeople are going to, I don't know, whatever that is. Like for us, it's about redefining leadership and creating happy teams. That is our vision. And mission statement is like, so what are the key activities that are going to help you accomplish that vision? Right. And like, and so that is, it's like, what is, so it's the, why is the vision statement? the what, like what are the key activities or your missions? Like how does that manifest? Like, because you can do a million things to affect sales, but if there are three, let's say, core pillars of your business, then that is what's going to go into your mission statement. We do this by blah, 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 blah. Okay. And then core values is your how. Like, how do you live that out? How do you deliver your service? How do the people of your company, like, and I always like to call it the culture islands. I have a whole way of like talking about culture. You're creating a people group. You're creating core values for your business. What you are creating is and Simon Sinek says this, or actually not Simon Sinek, Seth Godin says this. He says, people like this do things like this. What you're doing is you're distinguishing your people group, your tribe, from the rest of the herd. Mm-hmm. And your core values is how you exhibit it. And so think about, like, if you were to go to England or go to Germany, or you just went to Paris and Italy or wherever that is, there is, like, you know, what time do they eat for dinner? How do they eat dinner? How do they talk to people?
How do they greet?
Yeah. All of those things are part of a culture, right? But it's not just the action that makes the culture. There's actually a story behind that. There's a why. And then that it turns into the how they start to greet you, right? Mm-hmm. So they didn't say, somebody didn't wake up in Italy and say, we're going to be really loud people, or like call every woman walking across the street, bellissima. Like, I mean, you know, I've definitely had a lot of catcalls in Italy, but you would have walked down the street in Austin, Texas and have people men catcalling you. And if that happened, there would probably be 911 calls and say harassment, right? So there's a how of like how your people group live and work and relate to other people, relate to one another. And so the core values is distinguishing, like, who are we? Who, what, and how do we do this thing that we call our business?
Cool. I love that.
Yeah, me too. What's after the core value?
Mm-hmm. So the reason why that culture mix is important is because, and I think this comes back to full circle with your, what do you do with teams that are just gonna crazy pants, right? I think that it's similar to personal development. It's also similar to marketing and sales in a lot of ways, is that if you are really solid on who you are and why you exist in this world and what you have to deliver and how you do it and who your people are, like, you get to start attracting the right people to your business, right? In the sales and marketing world. And you know, it's a lot easier to have that conversation because they're already ready. And like, you know, you might have that this is for you if, or this is not for you if, and you have qualifiers, right? Well, this culture mix is very similar.
Hello, everybody. This is Jake Stenziano, host of Wheelbarrow Profits Podcast, here with my co-host, the multifamily mentor, Mr. Gino Barbaro.
The Wheelbarrow Profits Podcast catalogs our journey to becoming financially free through multifamily real estate investing.
Gang, each week we interview a guest specifically chosen for their expertise in and around multifamily real estate.
We talk you through our entire process, every victory and every misstep and everything that we've learned along the way.
What does that look like? Buy right, manage right, and finance right.
The audio podcast is available wherever fine podcasts are found.
Or check us out on our YouTube page where you'll find tons of other great content.
You have core values by telling me how, but where now I'm a sales guy, I need to take core actions.
Sure. And so you can be a total jerk, right? Like, so for example, one of my core values is serve well. It's like, we love to delight and add a little extra to everything. Quality matters just mm-hmm. because, mm-hmm. right? So if you are a salesperson, and let's say your core value that you have decided, right? If your serve wow is part of yours and this is how you exhibit it, well, then wow, that serving wow is going to be in every part of your business. And from first touch to last touch. And how are you delighting, like, that first touch experience? How are you delighting when you are interacting via phone calls or emails or like, or what are you going to do to like go over and beyond so that way that person feels extra special and feels wow, like just goes, oh my gosh, wow. Like they, this is different. Like, wow, they really care. So if serve wow was their core value, then not only the way he sells or she sells, it's also the people that they work with, right? Their mm-hmm. assistant, like how are they reaching out to the person, you know, to follow up for something or what is their mindset when they're writing copy for something? Like what is the delighter that's going to be built into that experience so that the sell is not just about closing, mm-hmm. but the sales experience is from like, you know, from unknown all the way through even after to build loyalty and, you know, continued coming back for the sale or lifetime customer value.
I love that. You mentioned a few things that I wanted to follow up on. Mentioned culture jam and culture island. Can you give us like some insight into what these things are?
Sure. Let's start with the culture island.
Okay.
So a lot of people ask me like, oh, what's a company culture? You know, like, mm-hmm. I don't know, like there's the like cool millennial kids who talk about company culture, right? Like, and what is it? Like ping pong tables, beer pong, like, you know, wearing a bunch of swag t-shirts. Is that company culture? And I'm like, actually, no. Let's think about what culture is. And if you like, we're talking about what distinguishes each nation, not just like the border, the physical border of the nation, but like you could spot an Italian probably in Ohio, mm-hmm. probably, right? And so what is it about that Italian in Ohio that makes them, and then you tell me like what that makes them, makes you go, oh my gosh, they're Italian.
Pizza.
They're walking around with a giant slice. Yeah.
No, they might dress differently. They might talk differently. They might use their hands more when they talk. Certain characteristics.
When you go to Europe in general, people are better dressed than they are in this country.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. 1,000%. And like half my best friends are from there. So yeah. So you could like nail a non-American mm-hmm. like pretty quickly in the States, right? Because we're all the sloppy dressers. And then also their mannerisms and their accent and how they talk, et cetera, right?
Yes.
So there are attributes of the kind of people, remember people like this, do things like this. And so if you think about culture from like, what are the attributes? Like, you know, how do they look? How do they talk? What are their traditions? And like, what are the things that they value, right? Like, mm-hmm. I think I was telling you about how it took me till like I was 30 something, like late 30s, to realize why my mom, when she would call me, you know what she would say? She would say, did you eat? And it would make me so mad because I'd be like, mom, like, can you just say hello? But then when I lived in Korea, that's actually how they greet each other.
Wow.
Like professional, personal. And I dug a little deeper and it actually came from the history of being under so many, so much imperial rule, poverty, famine, war, not having enough to eat.
There's other cultural things that spin into it. When you go, if you are, for example, in Germany, you don't say what. You say please. And but it's please with a question mark at the end of it. So you say bitte, which means like what were you trying to say? Like I didn't get it.
Mm-hmm.
But you didn't say I didn't get what you mean.
Right.
It's pretty interesting.
Like, please again.
But you can go to Cincinnati, Ohio, where there's a very large German population. And if you say something that they don't quite understand, they'll go, please.
Oh,
translated from their ancestor. And, right.
Oh, wow.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
So do you call it Culture Island because it sits on its own?
I call it Culture Island because when we're doing the activity of like, what is your company culture and how do you bottle that? Right. I always try to do I do exercises to help people think about when they're creating their company and trying to create a unique company culture. It's like taking, you know, sell or die and you're creating an island of people and you're creating a unique culture around that, that is just uniquely Seller Die. So that, like, if you're walking down the streets of, you know, like LA, Ohio, Charlotte, wherever.
Show me your bracelet.
Yeah. Like, how can you identify those people? Right.
Cool.
And so that comes in the, it's not just like, do you do keg stands or do you wear, you know, polo shirts to work or t-shirts?
No,
or,
you have a mannerism, you know, about you. You have a style about you that, that creates the aura. But something you said earlier was very intriguing. The lifetime sale, like the
lifetime customer value.
Well, for, I got to make the first sale first.
Yes.
So let's talk about what steps lead up to that first sale so you can potentially get the lifetime relationship.
Okay. Are you asking me to teach sales? I mean, you are the expert.
Well,
I think we can talk about that because Teresa focuses on leadership.
I understand that.
Okay.
But in order to be a leader, you better be the best person in your group at your at the skill you're leading. So if I have a team of salespeople and I can't make a sale, I ain't a very good leader.
So how does that work? Because a lot of times what happens in sales and sales leadership is the very best salesperson gets promoted to be the leader. Now, being a salesperson, you have very specific skills, right? You can sell, you can form relationships with your clients, whatever those may be.
Get appointments.
Yeah. Close the deal, whatever they may be, right? Ask the right questions. Now, all of a sudden, you're put in a leadership position, most of the time never having led a team before, and with most companies don't give much training on how to lead. So what do you, how can you help that salesperson now turn sales leader, you know, in terms of this acquiring this new skill set?
Sure. Of course. So let me answer the point in time and future point in time. And then in the past, what I would hope would happen. So I did actually work with a sales team at a startup and doing a lot of training with them. And then also about talent management. It's like, how do you know when to move them from that, you know, we call them the QE team. And like, we would just like advance them to then either SMB, enterprise, individuals, accounts, et cetera. And part of the mix of things that we looked for were characteristics. And we had a radar graph, you know, the spider graphs. And it, you know, maybe about a fourth of them were actually the hard sales skills. And the other parts actually had to do with soft skills, like in how they promote or build team. And then just what their contributions were like outside of just trying to make, be the top seller of the team or the pod. And from there, we would determine like who we would advance on, who would be the person who like, who has that 360 look. So that's the, what I would say is how you would cultivate someone to then be ready for leadership to go on. Now, if that wasn't the case and it was all about just make the sales, be the top seller, now you're promoted because you clearly know how to do sales. I think it's really about that person. Like, I think leadership really starts with self-leadership and self-awareness and knowing that there's like a little bit of a, this is interesting. So I was talking to some founders, startup founders about this recently. I was telling them there is actually a little bit of a death, mini deaths that you have to go through where you are no longer, like if you're so used to being the superstar, it's going to be a mini death or a big one, depending on how big your ego is sometimes. But because a leader is only as good as its as their team. And if you don't see your team as a reflection of your success and that you're not in competition with your, you know, you have to move away from being in competition with your team, right? To then what can you do to promote and make this team look like superstars versus, and that's a reflection of you, right? So there is a big shift that needs to be made internally in that person to realize like, oh, leadership is responsibility. Leadership isn't about me being on top, it's trying to get this team on top. And how can we promote the team and how can we promote and like be able to individually identify, like maybe some people are better at closing the sale. Maybe I don't know what the process is and where salespeople work, but when I've worked in enterprise, there's usually different teams on different parts of the sales process. And, you know, this person might be better with this kind of account. And so you may start to individualize how you set this person up based on their strengths, mm-hmm. right? Because you want the team to win and you want each individual to win. And so as a leader, you're almost like a little bit like air traffic control in some ways. and sometimes too, like the shepherd, and sometimes also just the coach with mm-hmm. individuals and the team. Right. And that's a big shift. And I think it was hard to see. We did cycle through actually a lot of managers because there were a lot of people who were the superstars and be elevated to the role of the manager for like maybe that department or that team and just couldn't put down the superstar hat. Mm-hmm. Right.
That's yeah. very true.
But they could do it by example. They could they set a standard for the team and they say, listen, guys, I'm doing this. Mm-hmm. These are the 20 things that I did that helped me do it. Let mm-hmm. me coach you through those processes so that you can become the same.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. Right. It's like they have clearly figured out a magic formula, the method that works. And yes, 100%, it's about teaching back what works and coaching each individual to be able to succeed, right? However, if then they're, let's say that they're still on the phone closing all the sales, right? I've definitely been in teams where managers are still doing the sales and they're still at the lead of that. It actually, I've seen like a reverse effect happen. Mm-hmm.
It's like demotivating.
Yep, because they're like, well, that person's going to bring in 50% of the sales for the team anyways. Yeah. Why do I have to do
that? I'm going to throw this at you, though. Oftentimes, that salesperson who is a great salesperson cannot articulate what made them a great salesperson.
Yeah.
Yep.
So when you say it starts with self-leadership, what are some of the things they need to do to be their own leader first?
Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think... Well, I'll say this. If there's someone who is thinking like, you know, one of my goals is I want to be a manager on a sales team, right? If this is you that's listening, I want you to start thinking for yourself, like, what are the characteristics or like, what have been my best, like, what are my best bosses? What were those experiences like? What did they do for me? How did they act? Like, start evaluating from what nurtured you to become the superstar that you are. And start thinking about their soft skill qualities, how they communicated, how they managed groups, how they talked individually with you, how they presented themselves publicly. So it's like, think back to your super mentor. It's like a conglomeration of all the people that, you know, ever that you really respected and helped nurture you, and create your own sort of radiograph. I like to call it radiograph. So it's like, you know, like if you were to have a pizza, and you're kind of going on each meridian of the slice, like, and how many points out you are. And if you do, I like the radiographs because radar graphs or radiographs, spider graphs, because it shows you where you might be really strong in one quadrant or one half and like not the other. So it shows you where you can grow.
Mm-hmm.
And then what you can do is start like seeking out people, colleagues even, or people who you don't even work with, or go to workshops or start reading books, like go to trainings that help you learn how to be better in that quadrant. And so that can happen at any point. And I think that achievement hat, I think a lot of salespeople, what, you know, they're all about the sell and they're like really great achievers, is that it's not it, like turn your achievement to that, like mm-hmm. becoming the 360 leader.
Mm-hmm.
And not just the best salesperson on the floor.
Yeah, I like it.
I agree.
And mm-hmm. cool. So I have one last question. I don't know if you have any questions.
Shoot.
Okay, so for our entrepreneurial diehards out there, and I want to turn the table a little bit, how do they know when it's time to hire someone?
I would say it's always time to hire someone. But, you know, with reason, being that... You know, let's pull this from the lean startup world. Okay. You really want to have your thing down, Mm-hmm. Like you want to have not just like your minimum viable product or proof of concept, meaning like a workable, monetizable business, something.
Okay. Whether
that, you know, a product, a service, a system, you want to have that in place. And it doesn't have to be perfect, but you have to know that when you, it's like the slot machine, like, you know, that when you're, when you put a dollar in, you're getting at least two out. Right. And if you have something there, that's when you start to think about finding help. And I think what happens is that a lot of people, they spend so much time trying to build the house. Mm. It's a little bit like, you know, Field of Dreams, like build it and they will come. And I feel like so many people like just, they just spend all of their startup funds on getting the perfect logo and trying to get the perfect name and the perfect website and like perfect, all this stuff. And
yeah,
I'm
make
like,
the perfect sale so you can pay for all that
right.
shit.
Yes, that's my point. And so like then people start outsourcing and contracting thousands of dollars and getting an office and all this stuff, like, because then they feel like they're in business, right? and I'm like, dude, you got it wrong, right? Like even Jeff Bezos, like I was listening to, I think it was an ebook recently, and he actually stepped into one of the original offices that Jeff Bezos was in. Apparently it was in some, have you heard this story?
Hmm.
Like, well, he was in some basement that was like dripping, and all he had 2x4s up around and cement blocks and like plywood as desks. They were like stripped down, lean. Mm-hmm. And that's how he started creating Amazon. And he understood that he had to have the concept down, right? To know that this is a monetizable thing to then start investing in help, right? Hmm. Cool. So I would say that that's going to be key. And if you don't have that, then that's where your energy should go, is about creating, making that proof of concept that you can make, you know, that this is, you found something that people want to buy and give you money for.
Did I tell you she was great or what?
You did, Jen, and you were damn—you were damn correct.
I know. She's freaking phenomenal.
I want to talk about salespeople's core values. What are they? You know, is it having a yes attitude? Is it having a deep belief in your company and your product and yourself? What are the core values?
Diehards, why don't you take a minute? Maybe if you're driving, pause this and pull over or. Don't drive and do this, but take a minute to really write down what your core values are.
Because okay? if you do, or when you do, it will help you understand what it's going to take for you to make a sale. For example, one of your core values needs to be to transfer a value message. Oh, and that, I guarantee you, why don't you take a look at your dumbass slides that your marketing department put together right after they wrote their mission statement. Look at your slides and tell me which one of them has transferable value. And if none of them have transferable value, maybe you want to fix that.
Well, it's the how. So how would you create transferable value? And is it that with your attitude? Is that with your energy? Is that with your high vibe? Like, how is that? Because that's the actual core value that you want to be writing down and delivering.
Here's the deal, though. If your value is only your perception, it may not be the perception of the customer. And so whatever you're trying to transfer to that customer with respect to value has to be perceived value to them. Now, you can deliver it enthusiastically, but if it doesn't resonate with that prospect, it's going to fall flat. Yeah, the guy was enthusiastic, but didn't mean shit to me.
At our next company retreat, I'm going to have everyone come up with their core values. I have a whole exercise for this. And then we're going to use that to create new core values for our company for 2020.
Cool.
Yeah.
And will all the guys be there? Let's invite Doug back for the core values.
Hell yeah.
Okay, cool.
Do you have some core values that you guys live by that you'd like to share with the diehards?
One of my core values is to have a good time. And I, no matter what happens, when I walk into somebody's office or they come here, I'm having a good time. And they, you know what? They know I'm having a good time and they want to be around me.
One of my core values that I've adopted through reading Jeffrey's Little Gold Book of Yes Attitude, and this is not purposely a plug for that.
Yes, it is.
Is yes attitude. Like, I want to have a yes attitude all the time, and I want people to actually say that about me. Like, oh, that Jen girl, she has such a great attitude, because I want to embody it and have it be part of my presence all the time. And so it's always top of mind for me because it's a huge value for me.
One of my core values is build relationships through friendship. So I want to make friends with everybody. As you know, I talk to everybody.
Yep,
some people I engage a little bit deeper. But let me tell you something. We were at Whole Foods 2 days ago, and some guy comes up to us who we do not know and says, "You don't know me, but my dad was Bill Elder. Bill Elder was my banker from First Citizens who passed away, I'm going to say, almost a decade ago. And this kid came up to me to tell me that how much his father liked me. Now, I loved his father. Let's get that right. But now there's an opportunity with it." He sent an email saying, "Hey, I can do this, this, and this for you." And I said, "Have at it."
Mm-hmm.
All of those things come from the core value of making friends and being
lifelong friends.
Yes, yeah, lifelong friends. I mean, after lifelong friends.
Yeah.
But the bottom line is, you know, diehards, think about who are your best friends, who are your best customers, and how many of them are your best friends and your best customers.
Ooh.
And that, yeah, it's a woo. And that's where you want to be.
That's right. And until next time, I'm Jen Gluckow.
I'm Jeffrey Gittimer. I'm reminding you to get out there with your core values and make a sale, even if your core value ass falls off.
Sell or diehards. If you love the show, make sure you've subscribed.
And if you've subscribed, make sure you rate us on iTunes or give us a star on Overcast.
And if you've done all of that, tell a friend about the best sales podcast on the planet. Or better yet, tell both your friends.
And if you've done all of that, well, you're a true sell or diehard, and we thank you.
This has been a presentation of the Sell or Die Network. For more podcasts that you can take out into the street and turn into money, visit sellordienetwork.com.